I'd like to welcome everybody to House Education. It's Wednesday, March 31st, and it is 8:05. And President Representative Keller, Munoz, Wilson, Edgman, Book, and myself, Chair Seaton, and Gardner is excused. And at this time, I better remind us all about our cell phones. And today we're going to take up House Bill 393, Charter Alternative School Funding, and House Bill 206, High School Assessments. It's got a poor, short title now. is there anything coming before the committee before we proceed? Okay, we'll take up House Bill 393, and the committee has received a lot of paperwork. I just want to point out for everybody that you have a copy that was sent by email to your office per request of the sponsor of the charter school application. That's, I don't know, 40 or quite a few pages there. And then we have a charter school rating template and some articles and administrative codes on the establishment of charter schools and the authorities that govern them. So that's all was sent to your office for printing. And then we also have a packet from the department, and we'll have them come up and present on that in a few minutes. But Representative Keller, would you like to go over the information, or would you like to just reintroduce the bill for us?
Well, sure. thank you, Chair Seaton. HB 393 is the result of a request from the Alaska Charter School Association and their desire to be able to qualify for grants that are available from the federal government. I confirmed last night, at least from one source, that there's a variety of grants available, not just, this isn't directed just at Race to the Top. And the idea is that we put money in a into a fund or a program that gets allocated out to the charter schools on some kind of a per pupil formula. And that was the intent of the bill, was to set that up to help them to qualify for these grants. Representative Seaton, you had a question on the whether or not it was, what was happening there as far as the obligation that was being picked up by the, both the department and the school district was appropriate. And I jumped to the conclusion that he didn't understand. And I apologize for that, because I found out it was me that didn't understand. I went back to our drafter, and you have an amendment there in front of you that addresses at least one part of that. And that is that it references law that I gave you a copy of, 1411-020, that assumes the assumption of responsibilities when it comes to building facilities. And I have amendments in front of you that basically refer to this statute and take out the language of the bill that talks about an approved project, because it instead of being approved, it's under this jurisdiction of this particular law. Now, whether or not that'll answer all the questions, we're going to find out. I got a hunch I'm going to learn some things today myself. I asked the deputy superintendent of Wasilla to be online to answer questions, and I'm sure the department will throw some more light on this. But if you would like, I can move the amendment, however you want to proceed. But I'll just stop there. Maybe you all have copies of the response to Representative Seaton from Legal Services, and that's from the same drafter that drafted the amendment. So, and I believe she's also going to be available for questions. So, thank you.
Okay, thank you. And trying to figure out, before we get the amendment before us and we're working on line by line details of the bill and let's bring up the department to, if that's Representative Keller, that's okay with you?
Sure.
Okay. We'll do this. I think it'll give us a little more global perspective on the process. So we've got, welcome.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Sam Tito III. I'm a school facilities engineer for the Department of Education. Early development, you had mentioned a packet of information that I had provided yesterday, and that was in response to some questions that were raised at the last hearing that I was at. The information that's in front of you, just in general, are a copy of the regulations that authorize the charter school facilities program. General guidance that was prepared by the Department of Education for implementing the charter schools program, and then some specific comments to our previous, our most recent application for the charter school program, not the charter school facilities program, but charter school funding program in general. But it does bring up or address some of the issues that were raised at the last hearing with regard to some of the areas where the state of Alaska is not meeting some of the desires of the federal government in the program.
Okay, thank you. And can you just make sure we've got Federal Register packet here. We've got one that says In-State Charter School Facilities Incentive Grants Program. Is
correct.
That, or were you talking about the actual Alaska regs?
The In-State Charter School Facilities Incentive Grants Program is the guidance from Department of Education on the facilities grant program.
Okay, and that's what you were referring to as to the regulations?
The regulations. And I was just reminded that the guidance was actually not prepared by the state. It is the federal government, U.S. Department of Education, not State Department of Education.
Okay.
The regulations I'm referring to were standard
the
CFR.
Code of federal regulations, correct. Not state regulations. Okay, I just wanted to be clear. So does everybody have that packet of material? It starts with this on the cover, and then it goes to the federal regulations, and it has one, the State Charter School Facilities Incentive Grants, and it has a USDA on the back. Mr. Keto, could you go ahead and lead us through some of this as to where we are?
Yeah.
And have you had a chance to review the potential amendment or the work draft based on that amendment?
I just received it as I came in this morning, so I haven't actually had a chance to take a look at that yet.
Okay, thank you. We may be asking you, as the discussion goes forward, to give us some help with that as far as how the department sees those elements.
Okay, sure. There are two other documents that were requested as specific questions at the last hearing, and those were the ones that you raised first. It's the actual status of the charter school facilities. And it provides you with a general.
Yes, it's just, excuse me. It should be the second page in that packet.
And that answers questions about the ownership of the actual charter schools that we have, and also has the list of currently closed charter schools that have been initiated. Also indicates charter schools that were never started.
So. Excuse me, could you turn the volume up a little bit on the mic?
The boost.
Thank you.
Just the volume.
Not on ours.
Oh.
They do.
Oh.
Yeah, okay. Go ahead. We're just.
Okay, so that.
Yeah, there we go.
Better, okay.
Thank you.
That table is a listing of the charter schools that are operating in the state, and also the charter schools that have been closed. It also includes at the bottom of the list charter schools that were never opened.
Okay, so those were applications that were applied for but never opened. But
They may have been authorized. They may have just not opened. I don't track the charter schools in that much detail, so I don't know what the actual circumstance for each case was.
Okay, thank you. Everybody has, yes, Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sam, I suppose the reason it's empty is because people don't know, but on Fairbanks had a New Beginnings Charter School, and it closed in 2002, and it doesn't say when it opened. And then Matt Sue had one that closed in 2004, and it doesn't say when it opened. And can you speak to that?
Right. The individual that put this together patched it together from a lot of different sources, made phone calls to districts, and was able to answer where he could, but some areas he didn't have the information, so he wasn't able to answer those specific questions.
Well, we appreciate the department putting that together because it's gives us a broader perspective of what we're talking about. Representative Keller.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Sam. The number of leased facilities there by the charter schools, as I remember the law, the superintendent has the authority to authorize a building being used if it's safe for the children. That's, I think, the existing law. I would assume that some of these leased facilities had to have alterations and that kind of thing to make them usable, you know, some kind of conditions and that kind of thing. And I'm just asking if that's also your understanding, that the districts are spending money upgrading some of these lease facilities and, of course, paying the lease itself, you know, so it was built into that.
Through the chair, Representative Keller, the districts or the charter schools through the districts do pay the leases. Their operating budget does pay the lease. I don't know specifically of what happens in each charter school, but through my program, through the Department of Education's facilities program, we don't provide funding for a leased facility. So if a school district is providing any funding to upgrade a facility for occupancy by the students, then presumably that funding would be provided out of their operating budget, or it would be a condition of the lease that they've entered into with the lessor.
Thank you. There any further questions on those? So those are either district-owned or leased facilities, and that's the responsibility of the local district to decide how they're going to provide facilities for a school that they have authorized within their district. Is that
correct?
What I'm hearing? Okay. Further questions on that? Okay, can you lead us just a little bit through the State Charter School Facilities Incentives Grant Program?
Yes, I can. To the extent that I know about it, I've learned a little bit more since the last time and a lot more since this whole issue started, so it's been a very informative process for me. My understanding of the program is the first time that I was able to identify that the State Charter School Incentive Grants Program appeared was in 2001 with No Child Left Behind. It was reauthorized in 2004. My understanding is that there were two states that received grants through the program and are currently either at the end or just finished their program, and those states are California and Indiana. Right now, it was reauthorized again with the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. And my understanding is there is a regulatory amount of grants that could be allowed, of total of four, or up to $10 million per state, that are not currently funded by Congress. So there is a program there. My understanding is there's not yet funding available for the program.
Thank you. Representative Munoz.
Thank you. Are there still funds available for startup charter schools? It used to be that you could apply, and I think it was a $125,000 grant through the federal government. Are those funds still available?
Through the chair, Representative Munoz, I am not aware of that program, so I could not say whether the funds are available or not available. So moving next down the line, so we covered that the establishment of the program is there. There's no funding for the program right now, but through the regulations and through the federal guidance, As Representative Keller had identified, there are areas where the state of Alaska does not even meet the standard to provide information to get scored very well. So what happens is it's a competitive program, my understanding. So if the funding's available, states provide applications. The applications are scored and reviewed by federal reviewers, and then that prioritization is where the federal government would provide funding if the funding were available to a program. The programs, my understanding, the way they're set up is that the federal government will provide the state with startup or enhancement funding for school facilities by helping the state step into a fully functional facilities funding charter school funding program. And that's the intent of the reducing percentage of the federal government, where the federal government will participate at a high level in the first year of the approved program, and that federal participation will decrease over time until the state's program is either fully functioning or functioning better than it was before the federal program had initiated.
Okay, so let's back up to that. The decreasing percentage of costs. That's for the program or for the facility? So if somebody wants to get a facility grant, I'm trying to figure out how the decreasing percentages work. Or is that for the statewide program of those, what did you say, four schools per state? Or
Chair Seaton, it was there were four grants available through the federal regulation for this authorization, but my understanding is there was no funding provided. So my understanding is each grant is a grant to a state for the state's program, and that the funding mechanism from the federal government stair steps in the state program, so it's not tied specifically to a project. Or to a district is tied to the state's program for funding of school charter facilities.
Okay, and that funding for charter school facilities is necessarily separate from the way that we currently fund for all schools, municipal bonds, or whatever those things are. This has to be a separate program for charter schools, separate from their, even though they're public schools in this state?
Chair Seaton, my understanding of the guidance is that it doesn't necessarily have to be a separate program, but that charter school funding for facilities needs to be provided on some kind of a metric that uses a per pupil calculation. So if the state of Alaska had a way of funding charter school facilities, but it didn't necessarily, it wasn't separate from our existing program, then my understanding is that could actually be used for our scoring in that area. We don't have that program, so establishing a separate program it appears to be a way to get there. But my understanding is it doesn't necessarily need to be a completely standalone separate program from the existing state facilities program.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Keto on this point? Does the committee understand how the stair-step funding works in the federal government and what the federal government would be? What they would be funding?
Let me ask a question.
Yeah, Representative Keller. I mean, I'm confused. If everybody else understands, that's fine. But I just don't understand whether we have a program that we're going to create and they're giving us 90% of the allowable cost for the first fiscal year for this one position and the $1 program, or whether it's supposed to be actually 90% of the facilities costs, or I'm just kidding. I'm sorry. Representative Keller.
I sure didn't mean to be putting myself in a position where I can answer all your questions.
I appreciate it.
But what my understanding is, and Sam, you can respond, that the that those percentages there, the stair step thing, are part of, are drawn from existing law, how the Department of Education administers other grants. You know, it's a grant administration language that I believe the drafter was drawing from there. But I don't, I think it's tied, as I understand it, the language in the bill is that, not a response or trying to match the federal stair step requirement. It probably matches, but what I'm saying is that the drafter drew that language, and I believe she's online, and she may be able to bail me out of this. but that's my understanding.
Okay, and if someone else in the department has other information, they're welcome to come forward and share us. Jean, Michelle, are you online?
Mr. Chairman, yes. This is Jean Michelle with Legal Services.
Thank you. Jean, we're looking at the program, and we haven't gotten into the amendments yet, but we're trying to quite understand what on page 2, well, let's see, I guess we have the actual bill before us. So it's on the stair-stepping mechanism, the grant mechanism, that's starting on page 2, line 2. Of the A version?
Yes. I have that. Yeah, I think I understand the question, which is whether this is the federal formula or whether we're just being generous here. And my understanding is that the Resource Recovery Act provides for incentives of, in five-year increments. And this anticipates that the federal portion of that would be 90% of the allowable cost of the project. There's lead-in language at page 2, lines 2 and 3, that require the department to apply for available federal funding and award the federal funding. So that's what tells the reader that these percentages are federal dollars, and then the state portion is the dollar per pupil, and then there's a local contribution that's anticipated to make up the difference. But the if the federal program isn't funded, and my understanding is that the fiscal year that this would come into play is 2013, then there's no obligation. If there is no available federal funding, there's no obligation to this of the state to apply. There are other ways to access this money, and that is essentially for the state to decide that they want school districts to apply directly for the funding. But that's a pretty large burden, particularly for small school districts.
Right, thank you. I guess we're trying to find out, let's say we have three, make it simple, three $10 million projects. Or we can make it four $2.5 million projects, just so the money isn't seeming so big. So we got $10 million of projects, and we go forward with a program. Do you know if the language here anticipates that it's only the money that expended in the first year would get the 90%, and the money expended, let's say it didn't get done, the projects didn't get done until the third year, that instead of a 90% federal reimbursement, there'd be a 60% federal reimbursement, there'd be $1 from the state, and the rest of the facility costs, the 40% then, is a liability to the school district? or to the municipality in which the school district lies?
Chair Seaton, Jean Michelle again with Legal Services. That's the way I would interpret this. I think the department could explain how they currently allocate grant funding under our school facilities grant projects. They require a 6-year plan, and I don't know how much of that occurs or is allocated for the first fiscal year. But the key in the bill is the term allowable costs. And I think other than the adjustment for student count, that term is definable by the department in regulation.
Okay, and we do have their facilities folks here before us, so we can get them to answer that question for us. So, and we appreciate you. Before we go to them, we also had a memorandum that you had sent to me, the March 30th memorandum, and it was on the effect of charter school construction aid on liabilities and local funding mechanisms. As I read through this, it seems to be that since this is a grant that's being applied for to be administered just like any other grant, and that in the last sentence, that, in the last paragraph on the first page, it says the last sentence of Article 2, Section 19 of the last Constitution prohibits local acts that necessitate appropriations by a political subdivision without a majority vote of qualified voters. And then I know of no case interpretation of this provision, but the bill's local contribution requirement could certainly be put to a vote. Nothing in the bill otherwise circumvents or violates bonding requirements or even specifies where bonding may or may not be used as a state aid, even if the district is a municipal school district. So interpreting that legal language, can you break it down a little differently so that I make sure I understand it?
Certainly. Again, Jean Michelle with Legal Services. The general question, as I understood it, was whether or not the bill allows for local contribution without a vote and whether that would violate either a bonding mandate or any other law. And the answer is that this bill doesn't specify how the local contribution is generated, and I don't know whether Article 2, Section 19 would be implicated, because I don't know whether the decision of a school board under the bill would be construed as a local act, which would require a majority vote. That would be the conservative approach. And realistically, both bonding and a vote for a local contribution is fairly pretty well limited to municipal school districts. So that really applies those two issues, the bonding requirements and the vote requirement, really are limited to municipal school districts that can actually generate that kind of local contribution. With regard to REAAs, there's no presupposition in the bill about how that money could be generated, but under the existing grant program of 1411-008, they use federal impact aid, which could be used here as well, I think.
Sure. And I guess my main question was just to make sure that you, the legal services, didn't think that by going this route, which requires a substantial local effort to be matched with a dollar from the state and these percentages from the federal government, that accepting that obligation without a vote of the people violated the requirement of that local acts require a vote of the people.
Again, Chairman Seaton, Jean Michelle with Legal Services. I don't know. I would suggest that the governing body seek advice of their municipal council, but the conservative approach would be to take a vote.
Okay, thank you very much. Anybody else? Representative Keller has a question, and Representative Gardner.
I just want, Gene, right, the way it's set up right now, yeah, we don't want to set the districts up for sure, but the responsibility for making those choices in whatever indebtedness they incur, that, you know, that's the district's responsibility, and we sure want to lead them into it with this statute, into doing something they shouldn't do. But I think it's something they deal with all the time. But that isn't my question. My question is back. I want to go back to the stair step. I think I heard you say, Gene, that the 90, 80, 60%, et cetera, that was to allow for response to the stimulus money, which is practically speaking, and I think we all agree, not available. Would we harm anything if we just took that out? I mean, you made the comment, I think, that allowable cost has to be defined in regulation anyway. So back up on line four there, on page two, instead of saying for approved projects, you could say for allowable costs of projects for charter schools, facility projects for schools. Would we be harming the bill if we took that stair step out, is my question, other than to make it so we could anticipate the declining stimulus money, which isn't coming anyway for this.
Through the chair, Representative Keller, again, Jean Michelle with Legal Services, I don't think you need to specify the percentages, but that may make the implementation difficult because it would be hard to tell just from the legislation what level of commitment the state and local entities are making when they apply for these grants. I didn't put a lot of detail in the bill in terms of eligibility or other federal or potential federal requirements because they seem to be sort of a moving target right now. But we could defer in the bill to a federal funding formula in a general way, but I wouldn't leave it blank.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Gardner, you had a question?
I actually had a question pretty much along the same line.
Okay.
So.
Great. Anyone else have? Thank you, Gene, for being online with us.
You're welcome.
Mr. Keto.
Yes, it sounded like there was a question and there's some confusion on maybe it's just in how we're looking at the way the program would work. So what I'd like to do is briefly explain how our existing program works, just a couple of minutes, and then that will be kind of the lead-in for how I was looking at this legislation. Right now...
Yes.
I have a question.
Representative Wilson.
Before you start, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before you start, are you talking about your grant program that you have now or the charter school program that you have now?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, it's the existing grant program, which actually establishes how I looked at the way this program might operate.
Okay. And that is grant for facilities?
For school facilities, correct.
Okay. For charter schools?
Or for any school facility. So it could include charter schools if a district actually applied through our program for a charter school facility, but it includes any facility. But basically, we receive applications once a year, review the applications, score and prioritize them, so we have a list of projects. Those projects appear before the legislature and receive funding, and then we administer those on an annual basis so that the funding appropriated by the legislature in a given year is funding for specific projects in that year based on how much the legislature has provided funding for the projects. So what we're looking at is in a given year, we're given an amount of money that funds a certain number of projects. So So when I looked at the legislation from Representative Keller, I was looking at a program, and to try and make it easier conceptually, I identified just a flat funding amount, or an estimate of a flat funding amount. So the idea that I took was that the state of Alaska has a established charter school funding for facilities funding program for charter schools.
Is that $1?
That was the $1 program that provides, estimated maybe $20 million a year. It could be $10 million a year. But if you start out with a flat amount of money a year, that money goes to projects that are approved, however we end up deciding to approve those projects. And my understanding of that is that we say you get $10 million a year in a program, that the federal government in this stair-step methodology would pay 90% of that $10 million the first year, with the state paying whatever the per pupil allocation was, and the school district coming up with the balance, and that amount, the funding level or the number of projects would remain essentially constant, and that amount for federal participation would decline as the program moved forward.
So in the third year of the program, if there was federal funding, that would be coming in at?
The federal funding would be at about 40% of the total program, so $40 million or $4 million out of the $10 million, and that the state share would be the $1 per student, and then the local share would be whatever the balance of that $6 million would be.
So I think the lesson there is get in first.
Correct.
Representative Wilson.
I have a series of questions.
Yes. Representative Wilson.
Okay. When the schools present their project to the department, at what stage does the project have to be? Does it have to have, did the school have to hire an engineer or an architect and get the drawings all made, and so they know exactly what it's going to cost? So that, I mean, what stage of the project do they have to present it to the department?
And through the chair, Representative Wilson, for our standard program, it can be at any stage. It can be from the pre-planning stage all the way up to, they can have design development drawings that they submit to us. The more information they provide, the better they score, and in our regular program, it's highly competitive, so the projects that score higher on the list are the ones that have done a lot of that advanced work. In a charter school program, I can't anticipate how many applications we might receive. So we might not need to see a lot of that advanced work, and they could come in at a planning stage to try and get some support for their charter school facility.
So in
Representative Wilson.
So in your estimation, schools that have a good tax base where they could pay off and or even hire an architect an engineer or someone to check out how what this is going to cost and everything. How do the schools do it that can't afford to do that? How do they ever rank near the top then?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, in our standard program, we do have several districts that are REAAs that do a lot of the advanced work that are able to score very well in their projects. There are that is only one metric. The amount of work put in is only one metric. So if a project comes in to us that has a significant number of code violations and has some emergency situations, then that project, without having all that advanced work, can still move up the list. So the list is fairly well distributed based on several different criteria, not that one criteria alone.
Okay. So you feel...
Representative Wilson.
Thank you. I'm sorry. So you feel that whether it's a small school or a school that really just only has two teachers and they're hanging on to the teachers or whatever, and they can't afford to do that, you think their chances then are just as good as somebody else's?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I do. with respect to the charter schools, we tend to see the charter schools more in the municipal areas that do have the tax base, that do have the ability to prepare some of that advanced information. But I can't say that the charter school facilities program would be extremely competitive because there are a far fewer number of charter schools in the state.
Okay. And can I make a few comments here? Are you ready for comments yet?
Let's wait. I think we had some other questions first. No? Do we have a question?
I would like to say thank you. I probably learned more than I knew about the facilities grant program.
So,
so
can I have a question?
Yes. Representative Munoz.
Thank you. Are we required to have a step down with the federal funding? Can we structure it so that we receive one-time funds and then decide how those funds would be allocated within our state? Or do we have to stick with this formula?
Through the chair, Representative Munoz, my understanding is that I guess I would agree with legal counsel Michelle that I don't know that the actual numbers need to be in the bill, but the federal program has the step down. So if we apply for the federal grant and we receive the federal grant, then the federal grant will be administered under those terms to the state of Alaska for this charter school facilities program.
Okay, but we don't necessarily have to allocate the money that way. We can receive it over 5 years, but grant, like if a project came in for $5 million, we could grant the full amount. It wouldn't have to be spread. Do you see what I'm saying? Spread out over time.
Through the chair, Representative Munoz, and I do understand, then that was kind of trying to understand the program. I guess what I did was establish that the program would be a certain level and that the federal participation would decrease over time. I was not looking at the program in terms of an individual project receiving funding and then future projects deciding whether or not they would receive funding. I was looking at it in terms of an overall program grant.
So my understanding is, let's say that the state of California applied and was granted in Indiana. So let's say they had $50 million a year that they were granting, and the program was going to be let's take $100 million a year. So, that first year, that program would have to be 10% state or local match. And the next year, that program was going to have to be $20 million local match. The third year, it's going to have to be 40% local match. But is that the way the grants were administered? Like, this is a $100 million a year program for the state, and there's a commitment by the state or the and its municipalities to spend $100 million each of those years, and the federal government participation in that $100 million program decreases over those 5 years, but the commitment is you have to have at least in the federal guidelines, is you're establishing a five-year program.
Chair Seaton, that was my understanding actually, is that the federal government program is a five-year program, but they're assisting the state in developing the state's permanent facilities funding program.
Okay, thank you. Representative Wilson.
If it usually takes 6 years, or that's what your program now does to build something, you plan it over 6 years. So I'm trying to think, okay, the first year you're getting the plans made and the design done and everything, and so it's not as much that first year. And then the next year, maybe you bought the land, or maybe you've already have the land, so you're putting in the foundation, and then the next year, I'm not quite sure I understand exactly how you're, what is being done each year. And then many times we can't afford to pay something in that big of a whopping amount. And so it may take more years to pay that off than so can you just explain that a little bit?
Sure. Through the chair, Representative Wilson, the way our existing program works is projects are funded on a per project basis. So maybe if I explain it in terms of individual projects instead of dollar amounts, that would make sense. So say we've got anticipate 5 projects for charter schools each year that, or I guess 10 to make it easy because of the percentages. So we anticipate that we'll, in our charter school facilities program, that we'll have 10 projects each year in our program. Basically, if each project were the same amount, that would mean that 8 projects would be funded by the federal government, 2 would be funded by the state in the first year, and then it would stair-step down. The way the funding works is we actually obligate all the funding for that project in that first year. So that first year of the program, any of those projects that are authorized, that are approved for funding, would be funded within the funding level. So the next year, we would fund the next group of projects. It wouldn't it would not be funding of a portion of a project in a year and then another portion of that same project in the next year. Each project would be fully funded in the year that it was approved by the department.
So let me see. I think I'm finally understanding the program. If the we have a major maintenance grant program, and I think that's the one you've been describing, right?
Correct.
Okay, so if we didn't have that, and the federal government wanted us to have a major maintenance program, they would come to the state and say, if you will establish a program of $50 million a year that is an ongoing program, that's going to go on, you know, as a permanent program, $50 million a year, we want to have you do that to upgrade your facility. So in the first year, we're going to grant you 90% of the money in that project, in that permanent project thing. The next year, we're going to grant 80% of the $50 million program that you've established. In the fifth year, we're going to give you 20%, but you're expected to carry on at $50 million a year in this permanent program. And that's going to be picked up from the state amount and the local participation. And the difference here is that we are saying the state amount, the state participation in this program, other than the major maintenance where we do 100%, it's going to be $1 per student, and the rest is going to be required to be local effort from the municipality.
Is Chair that Seaton, yes, that's my understanding.
Okay. Thank you. I think I finally understand the program. Representative Wilson, did you have another follow-up on?
I'm doing some figuring okay. here, and I've got my question, sure. but I'd rather have somebody else go ahead first.
So, Mr. Chair, we would be in effect promising to continue this program through the life of the, through the terms, and what about after that? After we get down to the bottom level, we could cancel it.
The Chair, Representative Gardner, whether the state continues with the program is entirely up to the state, but the intent of the federal legislation, my understanding, is that the stair step would help the state establish a facilities funding program for charter schools, and that program would continue. Whether the individual states continue after the federal participation, the federal government can't require.
Thank you.
Okay. So,
I do have.
Yeah, Representative Wilson.
Okay, I'm looking at this chart that you gave us that somebody pulled together for you. It looks like that there was a total of 48 charter schools that were wanted in the state altogether, that were wanted at one time or another. 15 of them never ever opened, and 8 closed. Approximately 3 years after they were open, but a couple of them went a couple years longer than that. So 23 of them failed. Now, but there's 25 that are open and running still, and three of those have less than 100 students. So I mean, they're probably struggling a little bit because they have a less than 100 students. But what I'm looking at is that approximately, roughly, 50% fail. So if we're looking at that, where are we with the money when that happens?
Through the Chair, Representative Wilson. My understanding of federal grant programs is if we build a facility for a school district that serves charter school students, and that charter school is no longer operated for the benefit of those charter school students. My belief is, and I don't know this, just this is based on past experience with federal programs, is that the there would be grant assurances with the funding that came along, with the federal funding that came along, which would mean that this, that school district would be required to keep that facility open for public use for a period of time, and I don't know what that period of time would be.
Further, Representative Keller, did you have anything here? Okay. Anyone else have any questions for the Department of Facilities Coordinator? Thank you. Hope you'll stay around. Let's see, we had some people to testify on this program. Representative Keller, do you want to outline what your amendment's going to be before the people testify?
I would much enjoy that, yes. Mr. Chair, in your packets, if I may, that I passed around, you've got a work draft that is the product of me and my office. Don't let that confuse you. In the back of that packet is the amendment itself, A2, 1550A2 from Legal Services, and the first part of it is our version of that incorporated into the bill, and I will go through it item by item.
Okay.
Representative Wilson?
I want to make sure I have the right stuff here.
It's A.2.
This is the one we're talking about. Okay.
And just for clarity, the A.2 is a work draft with the amendments incorporated, and the amendment is the back two pages as a separate amendment. Okay. to the
But it's already in it.
Yes. It's something much easier to see than trying to go like back and forth, but that's a work draft. It's Mr. Representative Kelly,
do we need to bring it before us?
Pardon?
Do we need to bring it before us?
I moved it.
Oh, you did. I'm sorry.
You moved it before us, and I'll object for discussion. So
it looks complex. It really is. It's all on page two, and the heart of the change is on line five, where it adds the words "projects for which the assumption of responsibilities has been made under 1411.020," and I have included a copy of that also. And that I think that addresses the concerns that have been raised about whether or not it's appropriate for them to do this, because it's the same as is done for all schools. But anyway, that's the heart of it. And then taking out wherever it says approved project, and just calls it for the project. And the reason for that is that the approval will be on the basis of 1411.020, and just removes that confusion of who approves it. The department doesn't approve it necessarily. This is something that's gone through the process and under the jurisdiction of the local school district. This was prepared by Legal Services, and if you have technical questions, Gina, I hope, is still online, but it makes sense to me.
Okay, and maybe we'll get Mr. Keto back up to the chair again. We're not wearing out the carpet fast enough. Representative Gardner.
I'm sorry, I don't understand the distinction. Line 21, page 2.
Mr. Keto, I guess what it is you have a separate sheet that gives the 1411.020, and that's the assumption of responsibilities from the current statute. And where a municipality has to, or an REAA, and what they assume as far as, you know, the big question was who's going to own these facilities, who's going to approve the facilities, who's going to come forward and be the 10 or 80% responsible for matching if that was a program. But that was when we were looking at these by projects, and now we're looking at them by programs instead of by individual projects. So I guess the question that I have for you, Mr. Kito, is we're taking out the necessity of the, on page one, the State Board of Education, we're taking that out, but somewhere in here we're taking out the determination of the commissioner and approved by the department, line 21, approved for funding by the department. That was the mechanism I understood you giving us before as the state major maintenance grant program. If we would adopt this, I'm not opposed to specifying that these are assumed under there, but if it takes out approval of funding by the department, does that mean that each individual project is going to have to go forward and apply for grant funding individually instead of establishing a state program?
Chair Seaton, having not had a whole lot of time to read this, I can, I think the reference to assuming responsibilities under 1411.020 gets to the question of whether or not there's local approval of the project. The thing that I'm not sure about is what the effect of removing approved is. If we have a program, say, for $2 million and we have three $2 million projects submitted, the department, I'm not sure if there is a way, the way the bill is written under this amendment, for the department to prioritize which project would get that assistance from the program.
Right. And I think, Representative Keller, I think we were trying to get to the proposal you were talking about under who would own the projects and all those things, and I think that's a very good clarification. My understanding now from today is that the purpose of this federal grant is to create a state program for building facilities. And so I think that if we take out the approved for funding by the department section, then we won't have there won't be a program. And so do you see that the same way, as there wouldn't be a program, you would have a separate project over here, and there wouldn't be a, like the major maintenance grant program that we have now, because that would no longer be the case, that we would be establishing a grant program if there's no approval by the department, and therefore it probably wouldn't qualify under the federal the purpose of the federal legislation.
Yeah, it may be a valid question. It was not the intent to eliminate the decision by the department on dispersal of the funds. It was meant to make it clear that it's a local entity that is assuming the responsibility for the project. So if there's a wording that needs to be fixed here, I would defer to Jean Michelle, who I hope is still there. So you might direct that question at her, because the intent is to leave the department, of course, with the, it wouldn't, like you say, it wouldn't be a program if the department didn't have a standard of how to pass the money out. And that is not the intent of the amendment, is not to remove that responsibility.
Okay, thank you. And Jean Michelle, are you still online?
Oh, yes, this is
Jean
Michelle with Legal Services, and I agree that we should continue some, probably just on page 2, line 21, approved for funding and assumed under 1411.020. But as Representative Keller stated, the program itself is not very well spelled out in this legislation, and the department would be required to establish funding priorities and other application procedures by regulation. But we wouldn't want to take out the application process itself. There is, as I understand it, there is the option of districts to go directly to the federal government for this money. So we could do it either way. But if the intention is to keep the Department of Education as the gatekeeper, then we need to have some kind of approval mechanism. So I would delete on the amendment itself, on page 2, just on line 8, just take that deletion out.
Okay, and when we get to, I guess we have this as a motion before us. So, Representative Keller, would you like to make this a conceptual amendment and then just move to delete page 2, line 8, and wherever that's appropriate throughout the amendment?
Yeah, I would like to make my amendment a conceptual amendment and also that we will delete page 2 of the amendment, line 8.
Line 8.
Yes, that. Thank you, and I'll object for discussion.
Amendment.
This is page 2, line 8 of the amendment, which is approved for funding of the department. And I think that that's a conceptual amendment. I think that that's probably going to put all the approved project language back in.
Right.
So that we have a program going forward in this. And it would be just like the major maintenance kind of program. So you've got to put together a program for the federal government that you're going to establish a program, and they'll do this initial funding for 5 years, and then we'll that's your intent.
That's what the discussion is, and that's the way I understand it.
Okay, thank you, Representative Gardner, and then Wilson.
Thank you. So I just want to make sure I understand what we're doing with this amendment to the amendment, and that is districts can go directly to the federal government to participate in these grants, but what we're saying is we want the department to be the gatekeeper to prioritize the applications and further them along as they deem. Is that?
I respond.
Can we find out if we're correct that districts can go direct and bypass a program, Mr. Keto?
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, my understanding was that districts could not apply directly for this particular block of funding, and I can go through the guidance and see if I can identify where it identifies that.
Representative Gardner, follow up.
Thank you. Okay, so with this amendment, what we're doing is giving the district the authority to prioritize the applications?
The department to prioritize.
The department.
Through the chair, if that one section is in there, then the department would establish regulations that would establish a prioritization program. So if we receive more applications than we have funding to fund, we would be able to prioritize them.
Thank you.
Representative Wilson, and then Representative Keller.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So what this is going to do, instead of having one list of schools that need to be built, we're going to have two lists.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, we would end up with a separate list specifically for charter school facilities, yes.
Okay. So we'll have two lists of schools in order of priority, and then where along the line, as far as the I'm looking over here at the schools that never opened. There were 15 of them that never opened. So where along the line are you working at it that you can say, okay, you can build it? Do you have to have a charter school that's up and running but wants it to be in a different building? Or how are you going to decide? Is it somebody just going to say, we want a charter school here, so and we don't want to be in the regular school, we want to be separate, so we want the money. But they're not organized yet. How do you make these decisions?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, it is difficult, as you say. The way that we're looking at things right now is in our regulation process for our existing program, trying to identify when the state builds schools for a school district that might have a very small number of students. We are trying to work on providing an extra level of scrutiny for smaller schools to make sure that there's a stable student population. I would anticipate that the regulation process would address those issues as well, especially if we determine that there are assurance requirements that require that school maintain or be open. We would want the school district and the charter school to understand what the local obligations would be for operating before we would actually allow them to have an approved project. So they would understand that they are on the hook for a certain amount of time, if that is indeed one of the grant assurances from the federal government. And they would also understand that receiving money from the state and the federal government would come along with the obligation to try and maintain that as a school facility.
Okay, and so I want to make sure that we're still on the, we have an objection to the amendment, and I'll remove my objection. I just want to restate the amendment to the amendment was conceptual, and that was removing from page 2, line 8, approved for funding by the department, and anywhere else in the bill where that needs to have parallel language reinserted.
I'm very satisfied with your description.
Okay. And so I remove my objection. Are there any further objections to the amendment to the amendment? Seeing none, we are back to conceptual amendment number 1, which is 26LS1550/A.2. And Representative Keller.
I move amendment number 1, conceptual amendment number
amendment
1.
We
did that, I thought.
As amended,
yeah.
Object for discussion.
Okay, so we have amendment number 1.
Oh, that's this.
conceptual amendment number 1, as amended before us. I believe I objected. I'll remove my objection. Representative Munoz objects for discussion.
Thank you. On the assumption of responsibility. Sorry, I was going to ask Mr. Keto, but thank you. On the assumption of responsibilities, is that the same for the major maintenance list, the local assumption? Do we have that?
Through the chair, Representative Munoz, that is an existing part of this statute that that requires or allows districts to assume responsibility for school construction and major maintenance projects.
Okay. So what if a charter school has been approved by the local school board and the state board of education and has a project ready to go that meets the criteria of this program and is eligible for funding but does not have the support of the local school district? Then is it not eligible, or is there an appeal process to the department?
Through the chair, I don't have a clear answer to that. My understanding is there is not a statewide appeal process for charter school authorization in Alaska.
No, I'm talking about this, just specifically the project, the construction, the major maintenance project or new construction or minor maintenance, any type of project.
So if a project did not receive funding?
No, if a school has been approved both at the local and the state level, which is the current law, it has to be approved by the State Board of Education, and it has a project that meets the criteria of this program, but then does not get support from the local district, is there an opportunity to apply directly to the department? Or to the State Board of Education? Is there some level of appeal opportunity for that organization, that school, to make their case to another organization?
Through the chair, Representative Munoz, I don't have a clear answer for that. It's not a question that I had anticipated.
And I just raised that point because it is seen as one of the criteria for a strong charter school law is when you have
an ability to appeal or to take your case to another authority outside of your local district. And I'm not saying that that's going to happen all the time, but at times there, you know, there might be local opposition, parent groups opposed to a certain program, and then lobby their board for the board not to take action, and then it doesn't happen for political reasons. So I'm thinking, is there an opportunity then to take that application directly to the department or to the State Board of Education? It's just a question.
To the Chair, Representative Munoz, I can look into that, and I've got that as another question to answer.
Thank you. And then if I could just make one other point in following up to Representative Wilson's question about the number of schools that never opened. I don't know for a fact, but I would bet that one of the problems was in not having a permitted facility. That is one of the biggest challenges of getting a charter school going.
Are we on the amendment? On the amendment?
Well, just the general. Yeah. Okay.
Excuse me. I just want to make sure that we get this adopted and come back. Question on the amendment to conceptual amendment number one.
To Representative Munoz's question to Mr. Quito.
Okay, and that was on the approval of
the approval process and an appeal. Yeah. Yeah. We have this document, which is a letter to Paul Pussing, acting director from the Department of Education. Because I've read through this, and I'm not sure if it applies to exactly what we're talking about, but since it's here, I'll assume that it has to do with funding for the facility for charter schools. And if that's the case, on page 4 of 6, under weaknesses, it says one of the reasons this application on this element scored low was because the state board, the local school boards and the state board both have to approve a charter school application, and the state board will not approve without the local board doing so first. There also does not seem to be any appeals process in place. So, assuming we're talking about the same thing, there's the answer.
So that's a question we're raising on the amendment where we're putting in approved projects again. I mean, that's what the amendment does. It puts back in. Not only does it make the municipality in which the charter school is located financially responsible for that charter school, but it also establishes that it's a program through the department. So, Representative Munoz.
Okay, speaking about the assumption of responsibilities.
Yes.
The language states that, let's see. The local council or assembly assumes responsibility. Are we talking about?
We're talking about the statute.
And that's part of the amendment, isn't it?
I mean, this is the assumption of responsibilities.
Yeah, okay. So I'm on task here. Okay, yeah. So the assumption. Sorry. The assumption of responsibilities has language that states the local council assumes responsibility relating to planning, design, and construction of a school. And often with a charter school, it's the planning group that is responsible for the planning, design, and construction, and trying to come up with a way to fund that planning, design, and construction is currently outside of I mean, it's not assumed currently by an assembly or a council necessarily. It's through that contract with the local board of education, but it's often funded in alternative ways outside of traditional funding manners. I'm just a little bit concerned that the assembly is taking the responsibility of planning, design, and construction. When that is often an independent responsibility of the charter school under contract with the school board. I might be
belaboring it.
Representative Munoz, I think the question, and this was the question that I addressed with Representative Keller and why this amendment's brought forward, is are we making charter schools independent and solely owned or leased facilities, and they are no longer a public school under the school district? There's two options. Either they're a responsibility of the school district and they're a public school and they're a subset of that, which can have contracts with charters, and that's all allowed. Or we can say you can appeal and go around them, you can excerpt yourself from the municipal school district so that you are an independent school not affiliated with a school district. And we don't, this amendment to the bill does talk about the assumption of responsibilities that are made under the current municipal or REAA structure. If we want to create a structure for charter schools that is not within the municipal or the REA structures, I think we need to do that in a separate bill, because that would be a dramatic change in the way the state has viewed charter schools. Okay. I mean, I think that that's where we're coming to. It is a philosophical choice, but I would hate to try and make it as an addendum in this grant funding mechanism. Okay. Is that any questions on that? I remove my objection. You reinstated an objection for discussion, or you may maintain your objection.
I can withdraw it. Thank you.
Okay. Are there objections withdrawn? Are there any further objections to conceptual amendment number one as amended? Seeing none, we have adopted conceptual amendment number one, which is 26 LS 1550/A.2, and we have before us under that same number a House bill. It's a work draft, House Bill 393 amended, that incorporates that language. However, that has been amended, so that won't read exactly as it is now. Our further discussion, or let's go to, I forgot we had public testimony. Let's go to John Wheatman. Are you online in the MATSU? He just hung up. Loretta Nardi, are you online? Or in?
Yes, hi, I'm here. My name is Loretta Nardi, and I'm president of Partnership for Alaska Charter Schools. And I'm calling on behalf of our members, and our members are parents, teachers, and administrators of charter school students throughout the state of Alaska. And it is on behalf of our members that we appreciate all the work you're doing to effectively make our lives better for the charter schools in the state of Alaska. At this point, charter schools have been around for over a decade and have proven themselves across the entire state. And we are in a position where currently we use our operating funds to pay for our facilities. That does not come like traditional public schools get their funding. We have to pay for our facilities through our operating funds. So we're not using that money to go to the students. That money is going to oftentimes leases. Charter schools in Alaska lease facilities. They're in portable facilities. And in some instances, and the very fortunate ones, get to use old schools that are no longer used by traditional public schools. So there needs to be something at this point, 10 years later, to help out charter schools with their facilities. And that comes in the federal grants. that we can get that currently we can't be competitive for. So I appreciate everyone's efforts here today, and I appreciate that you recognize this need to make our charter school law stronger so that Alaska can start competing for these federal grants for our charter schools, because at this point, something needs to happen for us, and it looks like our opportunity with these federal charter school facility grants and other grant options from the federal government is going to be the ticket to continue success with charter schools.
Thank you very much. Does anyone have any questions? Appreciate your calling in and sitting through our long discussion here.
Thank you.
Let's go back to John Wheatman. Are you on the line now, John?
Yes, I am. I apologize. You said my name, and then I disconnected myself, and I started to get it off.
That was quick testimony. Would you identify yourself and who you represent for the record?
Yes. John Wheatman, Assistant Superintendent of the Mat-Su Borough School District.
Good morning, John. I appreciate you also sitting through our discussions this morning. Would you go ahead and with your testimony or your comments for us?
Yes. Good morning. My name is John Wheatman, and I am the Assistant Superintendent of Administration for the Mat-Su Borough School District. Thank you for this opportunity to testify on House Bill 393. I strongly support House Bill 393 and believe it will significantly benefit the Mat-Su Borough School District's five charter schools that represent approximately 1,000 students and their families. I do believe that House Bill 393 will assist the state of Alaska and local school districts in improving the ability to secure future federal startup and implementation funds for Alaska charter schools. Next year, the five charter schools in the Mat-Su Borough School District will pay over $1 million in rent. Many of these facilities were never designed for students learning and for safety. I do believe that House Bill 393 will assist the state of Alaska in improving its ability to secure future federal facility funds for Alaska charter schools, thus allowing rent dollars to go directly to students' education. House Bill 393 will remove the cap, which limits the number of charter schools in the state of Alaska, and creates a mechanism that establishes and administers per-pupil facility aid programs for Alaska charter schools. Charter schools offer parents and children choice within the public school system. They provide smaller learning communities. They assist in dropout prevention and increase graduation rates. The children and parents and community members of Alaska charter schools are deserving of facilities that provide a safe, affordable learning environment for their children. In conclusion, House Bill 393 creates legislation that benefits Alaska's children. I thank all of you for your time, and I applaud your efforts for assisting the students of Alaska. A special thanks to Representative Keller for sponsoring this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wheatman. And if you have written testimony, if you would fax that in, that'll help our recording secretaries as well.
I will do that.
And if anyone else has written testimony, we will we'd appreciate getting that. Does anyone have any questions for Mr. Wheatman? Thank you very much. And how about Barbara Gerard? Are you online?
Yes, I am.
Welcome to House Education. Would you go ahead and introduce yourself and who you represent for the record, and then go ahead with your testimony.
Good morning. My name is Barbara Gerard, and I'm an administrator for Academy Charter School, and I'm one of the founders that began Academy 13 years ago. Good morning to all of you, and thank you for hearing this bill. Across the state of Alaska, senators, representatives, the governor, the commissioner, school boards, superintendents, and community leaders express their support for charter schools. Now imagine you're a new public charter school and you've just won approval from your local school board. You're thrilled to have this opportunity to deliver education in a new way, successfully meet children's learning needs. The future seems bright and hope abounds. The next day, reality sets in. In only a few months, you must find and lease a building that will hold a minimum of 150 students that meets fire and DEC codes. You must fill the proposed classrooms with desks, chairs, test books, computers, and, oh, by the way, the state of Alaska did not earn the startup or implementation funding from the federal government, which would normally have been approximately $400,000 per charter school. So now you have nowhere to turn but to your own resources, your own personal bank account, and anything you can gain from the community. You're facing a monumental task to open that school. Removing the cap and adding facility program language to our law increases our state's likelihood to win those federal startup and implementation grants. And we are also eligible to apply for the federal facility funding grant. House Bill 393 strengthens Alaska's charter school law, which currently is ranked near the bottom of the nation. Strengthening this law positively impacts your constituents by providing them with avenues to gain funding sources. It positively impacts education by providing new innovative learning opportunities for Alaska students. Passing House Bill 393 supports charter schools and provides another funding mechanism for facilities. Thank you for your support of charter schools. Thank you for your support of House Bill 393, and please pass it today.
Thank you for testimony. Barbara, is there anyone have any questions?
I have a question.
Yes, Representative Munoz.
Thank you, Barbara. In the 90s, there was funding available from the federal government. I think it was $100,000 or $125,000 per school.
Yes.
Was that, that was discontinued?
Yeah, in the very beginning, our state earned the federal startup and implementation grant, and we were able to obtain $145,000, which greatly helped our school start and fill the classrooms with all those necessary furniture and curricular type needs. But I, from what I understand, the federal government changed their rubric and how they grade those applications, and I believe it's 4 or 5 years have passed since our state was able to actually win an award. And I believe some of those applications or the scorecards of those applications from the state were provided to Representative Keller, and he has those. And it basically, the biggest problem is that our law ranks so low that we just, and having the cap and no facility language really undermines our state's ability to earn the awards.
Thank you.
Representative Keller.
I just wanted to say hi, Barbara. Thank you to you and John. I know it's busy around Academy Charter. I've been there. When you're in operation, I try to get a hold of you, and you're off in an assembly or somewhere often. So thanks for taking your morning.
Oh, no problem. Thank you.
And Barbara, where is Academy Charter located, for the record?
In Palmer.
Palmer. Okay. Thank you. I don't see any further questions, so thank you. And again, if you do have your testimony written, if you could fax that in or email it to us, we'd
certainly
sure appreciate
thank you.
It. Thank you. Is there anyone else online to testify on House Bill 393? Is there anyone in the audience to testify on House Bill 393? Closed public testimony. And we have the bill before us. Discussion.
Well, I do.
Representative Booth.
This is more of a question for the sponsor. 5 years from now, upon implementation of this, what does that mean for your community? What does that mean for added property costs or those kinds of things as far as what they're going to be contributing and their component of this?
Representative Book, that's a great question through the chair. But I trust our local board and the municipality, which owns the buildings in our case, to work those things out. You know, when we're down here, you know, we have a limited how much influence we have at the local level, and I have come to trust and respect the local government not to overtax the situation there. But I do want to say that we have a crisis in Wasilla in that we have every
available, relocatable, you know, all over. I mean, I forget the number, but it's a large number, and we're behind in the construction of schools, and I see this as a way to alleviate that problem. So in that sense, I see this as a very positive effect in our community, and I thank you for asking the question.
Well, if I might...
Rep. Boop, follow up?
Well, if maybe it wasn't the clarity. I'm not... this isn't a philosophical challenge. I'm just wondering what, you know, how does this enumerate? How does this come out as far as your estimation of the burden upon those folks? I'm just trying to get your sort of estimation about what this does, because this is an encumbrance, and they're going to be facing that. So,
Rep. Keller.
Again, I don't see it as an encumbrance. I see it as a way that our local community can to buy, you know, and construct schools, and I don't see it any different as than the normal school, normal or other, or whatever you want to say it, other school construction in the area. So yeah, it's always a burden to build schools, and I pay property taxes like everybody else, and they're very painful, and that's a problem, you know. And so I don't like it from that aspect, but I see it as a positive move to give the this tool to my district.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is it on the same point?
Well, or similar.
Just a minute. I think that there's several discussions on this point, so let's go over this one first. Representative Wilson.
Thank you.
Yes, Representative Wilson.
Thinking about is that the local people will make that decision. They vote. They have to vote on that, right? And so they would, you know, if the school district says, okay, we'll do this, mm-hmm. the local people still have to vote to say whether they're willing to do that or not, right?
Yes. Sorry. And Representative Wilson, I want to reiterate that that's why I requested the legal services memo. And on the bottom of the page there, it's talking about local acts, you know, prohibits local acts without a vote of the qualified voters. And, you know, our legal folks said that the conservative point on that would be to have a vote. There's nothing in here that specifies that there's a vote, but there's lots of grants that come to districts that might have matching money or something, and those don't necessitate or aren't necessarily votes, but if they're a big financial impact, then I think that, as she said, the conservative aspect would be to call that a local act and have a vote to whether to form that new school. So I think that is in all of our things, we'll have to read that and see how it is, but I would imagine there'd be a lot of people voted out of office if they went and took a grant which obligated them for, you know, several millions of dollars for a facility and didn't take it to a vote. So anyway, that was a purpose for that legal opinion, so that we could try and get parameters on that. Representative Wilson?
Follow up on that then. Thank you. I guess I will put it a different way. Could this proceed the way it's written without a vote of the local people?
Representative Munoz.
This also includes leases, and one of the biggest costs for a school, a charter school, is the lease cost, because as the person that testified earlier stated, that those funds have to come out of the operating budget, the BSA, the per student allocation. But how are you going to take a lease to a vote of the people? That really confuses me. So, you know, is it a vote of, are we talking a vote of the local council, or certainly not the vote of the people?
This is for building, isn't it?
It's also for leases and maintenance.
Oh.
Okay. So,
let's get, we had Representative Munoz and then Representative Wilson. Now we're going to Representative Keller.
If you permit me just a grandiose statement here. Part of the reason I enjoy serving in the State House is I only have 15,000 constituents, and they can get me, you know. And there's in that sense, what I'm saying is they can talk to me. You know, my phone is in the book. They know where I live. you know, they're my neighbors. Okay, there's one job is better than that in that sense, and that's school board, because they even have less. You know, they're right there. You know, they have real contact with the people. And one of the cornerstones of our public education system is that we have given a lot of responsibility to the local area. So whether there's a specific vote on this or not doesn't really concern me that much, because they have access to the school board members who are going to be the ones that vote. They represent the people in the district on this kind of issues, and they do that all the time. It isn't just this bill. That's what they do. I mean, they approve the leases that are existing, you know, what have you. This really doesn't change much. It's that's the system that we're buying into with this bill.
And I want to bring everybody back to, we're talking about projects. That's been amended out of this. This is a program, and there's going to be a grant process from the state that gets some reimbursements at different levels. And that was a confusion we tried to resolve earlier, is are these projects going to get 20% or 80%? It's going to be, as it's established here, this is like a major maintenance list, and it's going to be the grant from the state government, whether the state regulations require a 10% match, or if they require a significant match, I presume that then that might have to go to a vote of the people under Constitution Article 2, Section 19. If it doesn't require a significant liability to the district, then I presume that they would receive that grant just like they receive ARA grants and other grants that come through from the federal government or from the state for education. I mean, when we do a major maintenance project, rebuild the school, the voters don't have to approve that because there's not a significant financial obligation that they're taking from that local act. It's just it's receiving a grant. So that's going to somewhat depend on the regulations, but the way this is, it's going to be a program just like the major maintenance list, and how much the federal government gives us and how much we as a state have to put into that program is going to be an issue for future legislatures, whether they want to appropriate $10 million a year to a program and in the first year get $9 million of that, and then in the fifth year of that only get $2 million of that $10 million program. But that's going to be not the local determination on the cost of the project. That's going to be the programmatic cost and the legislature's contribution to a grant program. Representative Wilson.
So the way this bill reads then, they can get money for construction, they can get money for major maintenance, or they can just get money to pay the lease.
That's correct. And I would say that, Representative Wilson, a lease is probably a longer term than a one-year thing, so it's like acquisition of a facility. I mean, so there's many places where we have facilities where we lease the facility, and it's kind of like the long-term depreciated.
I understand what a lease is.
No, I wasn't meaning that. I'm just doing it for the public. Is that I don't think we're talking about operational costs. We're talking about facility acquisition costs, whether it's purchase of the facility or lease of the facility. I think that that's what's meant in here, but I could be wrong as well. So would you like?
Well, a lease could.
Would you like to get somebody from the department up here?
Yes.
Okay.
At least.
Eddie's still here. He gets to come up today. Representative Munoz.
A lease, I mean, it could be a five-year lease, and you can determine that is going to have X number of dollars and, you know, impact on the school, and that amount could be applied. I mean, we could take that as an application for these funds.
Before we get to Eddie, Representative Gardner.
we're talking about a competitive application process, and reading through the results from a previous attempt, you can see that it's really very difficult. I mean, you're dinged on a whole bunch of things, and I can't imagine that a simple lease operating cost in the way that most of us think about leasing property is going to be a successful applicant for these federal grant programs when there are competing projects that are purchasing buildings or whatever. So
I guess just what...
Mr. Jeans, the question is, this bill on page 2 here has that this can be for charter school facility construction, lease, or major maintenance. The question of having lease in there, is that problematic as far as going forward with an application for these federal grants?
For the record, Eddie Jeans, Director of School Finance for the Alaska Department of Education and Early Development. Mr. Chairman, that language is directly out of the federal program. So the federal program intends for the state program to provide some funding for leased facilities. Now, I believe that component is not to pay the lease, but to pay for renovations of a lease. And we currently do not allow that under our state major maintenance program. We only pay for renovations at district facilities, not lease facilities.
Okay, so is that the understanding of the committee? I'm seeing the sponsor say that his understanding is that it's that's for renovation or maintenance of a lease facility, and it's not simply paying the lease. Representative Gardner.
Never mind. Thank you.
You just want to get it on the record what the intention is, so that as we go forward, if there's any clarification language or anything that needs to be there. Representative Munoz.
I think the intention should follow the federal intention, and that if they are more expansive in allowing that money to be used for leases, then we should not restrict it here, because that, again, that's one of the biggest costs of a school. You know, most schools are leased, and those traditionally those are costs that are borne by the taxpayers in the state of Alaska, the facility costs. So I mean, I just don't want to restrict it if the federal program is not restricted that way.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, Representative Munoz, you have to look at a lease as operational cost. It costs money to operate and maintain a facility. So somebody's paying for that. So even when you have a charter school that's in a public school, the charter school will say, well, the district is leasing the facility to me. What the district is doing is making them pay a portion of the operational cost of that facility. So I see the operational cost as a separate item versus the maintenance or rehabilitation of a facility. You're always going to have operational costs, and that's what a lease is, an operational cost.
Can I?
Representative Munoz.
There's a school right down here at the end of the road, and they pay $6,500 or more a month in that leased facility, and that money comes out of their BSA, their per student allocation. That's very different from other schools in this district. So if the federal program allows a school like that to acquire funding to help offset that cost, then we shouldn't limit it in this process. So that's the whole point of
Mr. Jeans, is that your understanding of the $6,500 is or whatever that figure would be?
Mr. Chairman, with all respect, I would disagree with Representative Munoz. It does. I agree that it does come out of the BSA, but so does the operational cost of all other 24 school facilities in the Juneau area. Somebody has to pay for the operations. Heating, fuel, maintenance, insurance, all those costs, janitorial, somebody's paying for that. It's coming out of the BSA. So I see that as an operational cost that's bore by the school district through the foundation program. So it's in my mind, it's the same thing.
Well, if I can, I don't want to belabor it any more than I have to, but they have operational costs associated with the facility as well. The difference is they did not have a facility provided with state and local funding. that they paid for the, they're paying for the facility, and schools just like it all over the state through the money that they get per student, on in their per student budget. So it's, I think we're both right, but you know, there's definitely, you know, a disadvantage when you have to pay for your facility out of your, in addition to the cost.
Mr. Jeans.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Munoz, I'm going to agree with you that we're both right.
Okay.
Okay. Is there further discussion on, yes, Representative
Different
Gardner.
Point.
Different point.
Yeah. When you're ready. The provision in the legislation that removes a cap of 60 charter schools statewide, given that according to this chart, we have 25 open, 8 that have closed, 15 that were approved but never opened, that total number is still less than 60. Is the reason for removing the cap simply, one, I suppose, to make a statement about this body supporting the concept of charter schools, but also perhaps to improve our application ranking for the grants?
Representative Keller.
Yeah, yeah, the first answer is that it's clearly to improve our chances on the grants, but there's a philosophical question, of course.
Okay.
And then that philosophical question is, choice is good. You know, the kid, parents and children have a choice to where to, you know, they send their children, and this enhances choice. That's a fundamental concept of charter schools, you know, so.
Thank you. Yeah. I just wanted to confirm that that was what we were doing. Okay.
Are there any further comments on the bill? Mr. Jean, did you have anything for us that we had missed when we were going through this on from school finance?
Aspect? Mr. Chairman, I did want to just add in your little discussion about local share and having to bond for that and that whole discussion. The way the department operates with our grants is when we enter into a grant agreement with the school district, we don't release any of the state funds, or in this case, if it was federally funded, until we have assurance from the local district that the participating, the local share, is coming to support the program. Now, each project is going to have to be evaluated independently at the local level. So if you had a $100,000 project and the local share was $20,000, they're probably not going to go to the voters. They'll find that in their operating budget. But say you had a $10 million project and there was $5 million coming from the locals, chances are they're going to take that to the voters and put it on a bond proposition. Are they required to do that? No. But we would require them to provide us with some evidence that that other $5 million is coming from some source, either directly from the school district, or there's an appropriation from the assembly, something that guarantees that that other portion of that grant is being matched before we ever release any of the dollars for the total project.
Thanks for that clarification. Representative Wilson?
Thank you. Eddie, are you going to have to hire anybody else to administer this, or is this kind of going to be kind of just add it to what you have now and it won't be a big deal, or what?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I believe the fiscal note does have 1.5 positions added to it. As we've found out dealing with the federal government on construction projects, there's a lot of reporting burden that's associated with that. And we are estimating that we're going to have a separate process from the current process that we have for the major maintenance and school construction prioritization. So we do believe that we're going to need the additional staff.
Thank you. And I would just like to note that from the guidance document here on some of the last stuff, it does very definitely specify that you cannot supplant money, so that we probably couldn't use this to supplant major maintenance on other schools. So just either on the local level or the federal level. Further questions or comments? Committee wish to take any action on this bill? Or Reverend Munoz.
Thanks. I'd like to move House Bill 393 amended with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Thank you. We have House Bill 393 as amended before us with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. Is there any objection? Seeing no objection, House Bill 393 is amended. A version will pass from the committee. And
one comment?
Yes, Representative.
Just a sincere Kelly. Thank you to the committee. 2 hours, or more, counting others. It work well done. I appreciate it. Thank you.
And we are. We just don't have time to take up our other action today. We will see if we work that in on Friday. And so we will be adjourned.